We're talking with Wendy Hanley and Joe Schoen, Wendy Mazzaros, excuse me, and Joe Schoenman about their new book, Vegas Ragdoll, about a string of crimes committed by a father and son team that is almost unbelievable, hard to swallow that it could happen. But in fact, they are tied to at least seven murders. The reality of it is it's probably twice that amount is the real number, and maybe three times as much. No one knows for sure. I know that people have to be asking, well, if Wendy lived with them and saw this stuff, how is it that she didn't go to prison? We'll get into that and then go to the phones with your questions right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Wendy, I know we're talking about Las Vegas of the mid-1970s, a wild and woolly time, and it's the town has changed so much since then. I couldn't imagine anyone getting away with that kind of stuff again. But I'm sure there are people asking, well, why didn't you go to prison? You knew about these crimes. You met with Tom while he was on the run. Seems like they should have put you away. Why? How did you escape doing some serious time?
Well, I really never committed any crime. I was charged with first degree murder, and then it was dropped to conspiracy. I was a little girl running in a brainwashed and afraid and running with killers, and I did what I was told to do. What crime could I have been charged with?
I don't know. I guess that you're not reporting what you knew about what they were doing.
Well, you know, the hand thing, when Granby told me that walking down the stairs, I thought that was just a joke. And a lot of the stuff Tom told me out while we were shooting, you know, I listened. I listened, and that's all that I did. He was holding a suicide note on me. And at one point, I was almost killed by Granby. When Tony and he were hitting those jewelry stores and bringing back these big, huge bags of jewelry, and I was picking my jewelry out that I liked, Granby stole some of my jewelry. The next morning, I found out he took some of my jewelry. So Tom was in the kitchen cooking breakfast, and I yelled to Tom, I'm running over to Granby. He stole my jewelry, and I want it back. And I ran around the corner to Granby's house, pounded on the door. He opened it, and I said, give me back my jewelry, or I'm going to call the cops. And at that point, I said, oh, my gosh. I was thinking to myself, what did I just say? And I started backing up very slowly. I was backing up. Granby started coming toward me. I turned around, started running. Granby was running after me. He caught me. He flipped me up in the air. I landed on my back. He jumped on top of me, and he started to strangle me. Die, you bitch. Die, you bitch. And the next thing that I remember is Tom. I saw a shiny object pointed at Granby's head. I could hardly see because I was halfway out of it. He had already knocked me halfway unconscious. And he said, Tom told Granby, get the F off of her now. Get the F off of her now. And Granby jumped off me, and he said, but, Dad, she was going to go to the cops. She was going to rat. She was going to snitch. And Tom said, I'll take care of it from here. So Tom helped me up from the ground, and he helped me in the truck. And then he took me around the corner. And he drove me around the corner, and these men dressed in suits with binoculars in this backyard were looking over the fence. They were taking turns jumping up and down on this chair, looking over the fence at Granby's house. And Tom said, do you know what that is? And I said, yes, three guys with some binoculars. He said, no, those are FBI agents, and they've been there for over a week. and they've had Granby under surveillance. So maybe that's why Granby got so upset about you. But you know, Wendy, what I told you before, silence is the fence around wisdom, and you know what would happen to you if you went to the police. I would get word back before anybody else, and you know what would happen to you. So that was it. And he proved that to me over and over and over again. Whenever something bad was going to happen, Joe Bananos would show up at the house, and then somebody was killed. Or a cop from Metro would show up at the house, and somebody was arrested. But he was always told ahead of time. So it was like, where was I going to run? What was I going to do? If I was going to run to my mother's, all he had to do was come up there, pull me out of the house, and take me out in the desert and kill me. So what was I supposed to do?
Well, you do what you did, which is survive and figure out a way to how to survive, which is
exactly. I mean, when there was at one point where the cops were chasing Tom because he pointed a gun at some guy in the store because the guy made a pass at me, and I ran out to the truck, and Tom followed. All these cops are chasing this home. He's trying to run them off the road. We pull up in front of the house. And there's all these shotguns pointed out at Tom. I jump out of the truck. Tom said, go in the house and lock it. And they let me walk in to the house and lock it, and they take Tom up to the sheriff's office, and I don't know whether he was sitting in Lamb's office or Gene Clark's office, but he called me so calm and said, I'll be home in about an hour and a half. Don't worry. Everything is okay. And then I told him, well, the cops came into the house and took all your guns. And then he started screaming to someone that was sitting there, you sons of bitches went in the house, took my guns. I want them back. It was like he was sitting up there and he could tell them whatever he wanted to tell them. You know, and then the next day he got his guns back.
Joe, I want to ask you this in reaction to all that Wendy has told you, and there's a lot more we haven't got into, even more grandiose targets, including Jimmy Hoffa, and maybe a connection to JFK. I mean, the Tom and Granby worked her over pretty well, scared her. I wonder if they elaborated and bragged about things that they didn't do more as a way to keep her under control or scare her. Or is it possible they did a lot more? I mean,
I've got proof for JFK. Tom's brother was a SAC, a federal agent down in Dallas. And Tom's brother was the one that handled the JFK assassination, the incoming and the outgoing leads. I have paperwork and everything regarding Tom's brother. And every time someone disappeared or someone was killed, Joe drove up from Dallas to talk to Tom. And the first time I met him was when Jimmy Hoffa disappeared and Sam Giuliani.
Gene Connor.
Right. And when Tom and Granby did jobs, and if they were out of state, they just didn't go do one. They did two, just like two or three, just like the Tamarand murder. I believe Granby killed Tamarand, and the detective that I was working with for 2 years believes that too. And the following day, he was burning down and vandalizing Cesar Chavez's Union Hall. And, you know, it's just like when they had to go out of state, they just didn't do one job. They did two or three.
And so it's like a package deal, like a bargain deal.
And, you know, and the funny thing about Cesar Chavez is at the end of September, a big reporter out of the Monterey Tribune, Julia Reynolds, had contacted me because she was writing a story about Cesar Chavez and the attempted murder plots on his life. Well, she had met with Cesar Chavez's attorney, Jerry Cohen, and the first name that he brought up was Tom Hanley. And so I was sitting here reading her emails while we were on break, and she's sitting here talking about how when Jerry Cohen first met Tom Hanley, the Teamsters took him into a room and said Tom Hanley was their representative and he'll help you, and you know, so come to Vegas. You know, the Teamsters were trying to get Cesar to meet them in Fresno, but Tom wanted them to come to Vegas because Fitzsimmons was in town at that time. Well, Jerry Cohen went to the LAX to meet Tom Hanley, and then he got the weebie-jeebies. He got creeped out and said no. And it was a good thing he had good intuition, because Tom told me this story, that if Jerry Cohen would have came back to Vegas with Tom and they did not work out this union fighting with Cesar Chavez, then Jerry Cohen was never going to come back to California. He was going to be killed. But anyway, Tom Hanley then was even as a big suspect in the murder plot against Cesar Chavez. And the only reason I didn't talk or write about that in the book, because Cesar Chavez wasn't killed by Tom Hanley, he lived. But it's funny how when the book is almost getting released and then it starts going around, these reporters start contacting me regarding other things that Tom did, you know, and it specifically, this is really big stuff. I didn't even know who Cesar Chavez was. I didn't even know he was that important of a union leader. But Tom was the enforcer for the Teamsters and the Culinary, and he killed union leaders.
Yeah. Joe, I want to ask Wendy, I want to ask your co-author a question. Joe, do we have any idea how many people they killed? I mean, the police had said seven that they're primary suspects in. Is it an exaggeration to say it might be two or three times that number?
No, well, from the stories Wendy told me, I personally just sort of kept a running tally of it was about 19 or 20 from what she told me.
And that's what David Hatch said, too. Homicide.
Okay, we're going to let Joe answer this one. You said 19 or 20. Could it be more than that?
Yeah, it easily could have been. I mean, I'm sure he didn't tell her about everything they did, but definitely. I mean, Tom had been here since the 40s, so that's a lot of time. And most definitely, yeah.
All right,
20 from what she talked to me about.
Go to the phone lines and see what questions our listeners have for you. Angelo in Virginia. Good morning, Angelo.
Hi, good morning. And I'd like to say good morning to your guests. Frank Rosenthal's bombing, was Tony Spilotro involved in that? And how in the world did Harry Reid escape all this?
Well, Wendy, did Tom ever talk about, I think the timing was not right for that.
No, Rosenthal was bombed in 1982.
Right.
And Tom was already dead. But Tom did work with Lefty Rosenthal, and he did a lot of work for him. Harry Reid has been in Nevada a very long time, and he's a good senator. And back when he was young and ripe, he did testify for a couple of people that were involved in these crimes that I'm talking about, but they were his friends, and he said they were good people. So how does Harry Reid and Lefty Rosenthal come together? I don't understand.
Well, Harry Reid was chairman of the Nevada Gaming Commission when they turned down Lefty Rosenthal for his request for a key employee license. Rosenthal went crazy in front of the Gaming Commission, pitched a fit, threatened to reveal all kinds of stuff. And so Harry Reid actually stood up to the mob guys at that point. But
right. And I do have raw footage of, and Tom was very excited. It was Huey Lewis that he was going to testify for in court. And I went up and saw Tom while he was incarcerated. And Tom was very excited about Harry Reid coming in to give a good word for Huey Lewis, the person that made the silencers. So, I mean, but that was a long time ago, and Harry was an attorney or a legislator. You know, he wasn't the big, huge U.S. Senate guy. And he knew, you know, Nevada was small, Las Vegas was small. Everyone knew everyone else, and I'm sure Harry just testified to his truthfulness and the integrity of that person that he knew as a friend.
One of the other names that popped up, but Joe, you mentioned this in passing, was Harry Claiborne, who was a noted defense attorney who became a federal judge, who became the first impeached federal judge in a long time, primarily because of his friendships with Benny Binion. As Wendy has mentioned, Claiborne was friends with Tom Hanley, ended up presiding over some stuff that had a direct bearing on the case. I mean, you look at it today, and it seems outrageous that he would be allowed anywhere near it.
Yeah, all of this seems outrageous, but Wendy put it very well, that it was such a small place, and everybody knew everybody else. It was, you know, you couldn't swing a dead cat without, you know, hitting somebody that was involved with a casino or, you know, a higher up, and was probably a friend as well. And Claiborne also was Tom's attorney at some point. So, you know, the ties
Claiborne
are...
Claiborne was my brother's attorney. And Claiborne, you know, when Mike Benedetti wrote the book, I had lunch with him, and I said, I wish you would have talked to me before you wrote this book, especially on the bugging of Harry Claiborne's girlfriend, because I was there and I know who did it. And it was, you know, I just wish he would have talked to me.
Well, we could talk for a long time about Harry Claiborne. It's heading us down a different place. Like I said, a federal judge who was impeached, a fascinating story in itself, and who was one of this cast of characters in this time period that we're talking about. We'll be back with more of your questions for Wendy Mazeros and Joe Schoenman right after this on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Wendy Mazeros and Joe Schoenman about their new book, Vegas Ragdoll. One of the things, the most amazing things that Wendy had told both Joe and myself about her experiences with the father-son hitman team, Tom and Grammy Hanley, is that Tom seemed to have an ongoing conversations with the ghosts of the people he killed. He'd have arguments with them about why he had to take them out. We'll get into that and get into your questions as well right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Into our final segment with Wendy and Joe talking about their new book, Vegas Ragdoll, an amazing period of time in Las Vegas history, about a very bad cast of characters, Tom and Grammy Hanley in particular. Shannon in Minnesota, been holding for a while. Hi, Shannon. Good morning. What's on your mind?
Hi, George. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Hi, Wendy. This is Shannon from Neon Vacation.
Shannon.
How are you?
How are you?
I'm doing great. I was listening to this interview all night, and I just had to call and ask you this because you seem to put it so easily. You're calm, and you don't seem like anything rattles you. And I know, as well as you, that there are people or groups that, excuse me, George, I'm a little nervous, sorry.
No problem.
Anyway, that
it's
you know that there's
okay,
people
Shannon.
Out okay. That there's groups or, you know, people anyway that didn't want this book released. And you know that
exactly.
there's people that didn't want certain interviews released. And I'm just wondering what precautions do you take, seeming so calm about everything, that to avoid, like, personal attacks or, I mean, at the worst, you know, kidnappings or anything like that? Is there something you'd have to do? I mean...
Well, there's only one person that I'm worried about who lives in San Diego, and I get some reports from friends in San Diego that he's still hit up in his mansion with bodyguards, and he's too afraid to leave. So that's probably the only person I'm worried about. And, you know, other than that, the truth is the truth. It's been out there for years and years and years. So it's what it is.
Do you worry about Granby?
Granby is locked up in a federal prison under the federal witness program, and he will never get out.
But he thinks he will.
Well, he thinks he will, but he won't.
Thanks, Shannon. Appreciate the call. East of the Rockies, Dennis in Illinois. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, George. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I just have a real quick question. During your interview process, I heard Wendy sit there talk about Tom took her out to places where he has committed murders and hit the bodies and things, and I was just wondering if the FBI agents or any of the agencies has took her back out to the places and if they found any of the bodies or anything. And I'll take my answer off air. Thank you.
Good question. Thanks.
Well, he never took me to where he hid the bodies or killed them. Tom told me that the best way to get rid of a body was down a mine shaft. The detectives and I drove out by Sandy Valley Road where Tom and I used to go shooting, and I believe there's some mine shafts out there that they should take a second look at, because that was his favorite dumping areas. I mean, that sounds crude, but he always talked about mine shafts.
I should point out that that for those who don't know Nevada, I mean, we're one of the most mined states anywhere, and there are abandoned mine shafts all over the states that just go way, way down. That nobody ever goes down into because they're too dangerous. So actually disposing of a body in some place like that would have been a pretty good strategy because chances are it would never be found. Dennis, thanks for that call. Nicole in Texas. Good morning, Nicole.
I have a question for Wendy. I wanted to know, knowing all the information that you did at such an early point in your relationship and then going on for years, do you have any remorse for the things that you knew or the people that, you know, had lost their lives? I mean, do you have any feelings of, did you ever want to just give up and say, you know, this is not what I want and I need to move on and just go into hiding,
Shannon,
on your own?
Shannon, when I was living in that dark life, that dark period, I was a runaway child at the age of 15 and a half, and I ended up in a whorehouse. I ended up sitting with gamblers, high roller gamblers. I ended up with a mobster. I ended up what I call the circle of terror. So at that very young age, that was my life. I did not know if life was any different on the other side until I did get away and move to Reno. By that time, A lot of the horrific things that happened to me or I witnessed or I heard about, I repressed them. They were buried. Once I got to Reno, I became a political fundraiser. I was very prosperous at it. Had a whole different life up in Reno. And then I came back down to Vegas, and when Joe, my co-author, sent me the rough draft on this book, and I started going in and revising and writing and editing and looking at, putting myself, looking at something that was written and saying, no, it didn't happen this way. And then I was rewriting it. I was putting myself back into that dark area. After 2.5 weeks, it was so painful, it threw me into therapy. I have been seeing a psychologist every week now for 2.5 months. And I believe my psychologist and I have a very long road ahead of us. And of course, I feel remorse. Of course, I feel guilt. And all the pain is there. It was so painful. It was almost unbearable to live with. And that's by the time I got to the psychologist for my first appointment, I didn't know if I could wait 24 hours to see him. That's where I was, because it was so painful.
Thanks, Nicole. Speaking of guilt, Wendy, you told Joe and others that at least at one point Tom was talking to ghosts.
Yeah, oh, the ghost.
Tell me that story.
Well, that's like Tom with his guilt, because he killed so many people. While we were out at the office and he was outside working on some sheet metal, the phone rang. I was the little secretary in the office, and the phone rang, and it was Old Man Binion, and Tom always took Benny Binion's calls. So I told Benny to hold on, and I ran outside, and I said, Tom, Benny's on the phone, and he needs to talk to you. Well, Tom didn't even look up at me or anything, and he was talking to all these characters around him, and he was saying, you should have did this, or that would have happened. And then he would point to someone else and say, you didn't listen to me, and look what happened. And you did this, you son of a bitch, and now you're going to pay. He was talking to all these people, and I must have stood out there 10 to 15 minutes to try to get his attention. And I didn't get too close to him because I was afraid of the way he was acting. I got maybe 3 feet away from him, and then I started screaming, Tom, Tom, Tom. And then he threw his head up, and his glasses almost flew off his face because I startled him. That's how deep he was into his conversations with the ghost he was talking to. So the people that he killed, all the ghosts were coming after him, and they were going to get him.
Wow. Joe, that sounds like a heck of a scene from a movie. Any chance this becomes a movie?
Yeah, I haven't heard anything yet, but yeah, it really does. It is a heck of a scene. Just hearing it again now, I mean, I've heard that story many times. Every time I hear it, it's equally interesting to me.
First time caller, Bob in Northern California. Hi, Bob. What's on your mind?
Hi. About the same time period that you're talking about, there was a fellow up at Lake Tahoe on the Nevada side of the South Shore that was blown up. He was associated with the casinos up there, and his name was Chartrand. and he backed out of his garage, and then when he put his car in forward, it blew up and killed him. I was just wondering if any of the detectives or investigators tried to connect that incident with your people there in Las Vegas.
Wendy, does that ring a bell?
What year was that?
Say 77. I think Bob said somewhere around 77. That would have been right about the time that they were picked up, right?
Yeah, they were arrested in April of 77. So, or May of 77. So, I don't think they were up in Tahoe. They were more on the West Coast, in San Jose. And they're, you know, picking up money and getting ready for their further defense down in Southern California and Phoenix. But Tom said something to me because he knew he was going to prison. And one of the last remarks he made to me was before the FBI was going to pick him up, he wanted to make one last stop in Louisiana, and he wanted to kill Carlos Marcello, and that's all that he said. He said, I have one more stop before I go back to prison and the FBI pick me up.
Do you know why he wanted to kill Marcello, the mob boss of Louisiana?
I have a feeling, and I'm going to wait that for another time.
Okay. I'll try to get one more call in here. Tom in Baltimore. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning. I just wanted to make the comment that the guest that you have on this evening, she really didn't seem credible to me when she said that she didn't believe that she committed a crime. You know, conspiracy being an offense is the gravest character, and sometimes even outweighing the crime that's being contemplated, is such a difficult thing to prosecute. And that's why it has such an effect on so many different areas. And with the time that she spent in that relationship, and even by her own admission, her being upset that some jewelry, surely gotten by ill-gotten means, was taken, seemed to tell the true story that, in fact, she was along for the ride and having a good time. Certainly, at some point, she didn't seem to be, as she put it just a few minutes ago, so distraught to the point that she couldn't take it anymore.
Well, I guess, Tom, it's hard to describe what it would be like to be living with two killers who have already got your signed suicide note and the people you believe who've killed a lot of other people and who have police connections. Certainly the authorities in Las Vegas thought she might have something to do with it and then decided not to pursue those charges. But, Wendy, if you want to say anything else about that,
well,
go ahead.
Tom, I understand what you're saying. And my psychologist has diagnosed me with post-traumatic stress, along with Stockholm
syndrome.
So if you'd like to get on the computer and read that, maybe you would understand a little bit more.
Thanks, Tom. I appreciate it. And I understand completely why you'd say that. But you also have to understand what Wendy and Joe's response would be. One more call west of the Rockies, Charlie in Fillmore, California. Quickly, Charlie.
Sure. I had a question. About 5 years ago, I ran an ad for a truck driver, and the ad was answered by someone, an older gentleman named Leo. And through discussions, he revealed that he had been buried up to his neck in his own granite pit and forced to sign the papers over, the deed over to the land. And we thought he was full of it, but later on we went home and looked it up on the internet, and he apparently appeared in some of these trials, and I was wondering what either guest knew about that.
I think the Leo that they're talking about, Wendy and Joe, is the Leo in the Ted Binion. Right.
The Teddy Binion and the Rick Tavish.
Right.
Yeah. This came much later, Charlie, the Leo's involvement with Teddy Binion and actually with Rick Tavish, the guy who was first convicted and then acquitted of murdering Ted Binion came much later. It has nothing to do with Tom and Grammy Hanley, I don't believe. Wendy, you don't think there's any connection there, do you?
No. That was Rick Tabish was trying to steal the silver, and he, you know, that was all, that is a whole different case.
You didn't have any connection with Teddy Binion toward the end of his life when all that stuff was going on, did you?
No. I think up in Reno when I was doing some political fundraising, I did get a couple of, I got a couple of donations from him for some of my political candidates, but that's it.
Joe, anything else you want to say? We got just a short amount of time. Anything about the book or where it goes from here, or whether there's a follow-up? I mean, it seems like you got a lot of material to work with.
You know, there could be a follow-up. You never know. I think it's a remarkable story. People will be surprised and entertained by the book. I mean, people have told me it's a page-turner. You know, I was so deep into it, it's hard for me to tell. But it was a fascinating story for me in the beginning, and it's every time I hear about it, it's still fascinating to me.
Wendy, one last question for you. When you look at your daughter, do you see Tom?
What, George?
When you look at your daughter, do you see Tom Hanley?
Yes, and my grandbabies, Dylan looks like Gramby, and Danny looks like Tom, and they're beautiful children, and they will grow up. They will grow up fabulous.
Wendy Mazeros, Joe Schoenman, best of luck with your book, Vegas Ragdoll. Thanks also to Jim Carnes, my earlier guest. And thanks to David and Gina and Tim Vinal and Dan Galante there at Premier. Good night, everyone. I'll see you next month. Bye.